Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I am an alcoholic.
Momo.
Hello, everybody. Just some housekeeping. We will be recording and publishing the audio only portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website, simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody will chat with the first 30 day. You first.
Melissa.
Welcome.
Yeah,
right. Nice. Glad you're here.
Angel, welcome aboard.
Welcome. Anybody on? I can't. Hey, Daphne. Welcome.
Welcome, friend.
Right. Is that everybody? Awesome. Welcome, everyone. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum. Allow everyone to listen uninterrupted, Paul.
Paul would like to go on the record as apologizing.
Promptly admit it. It's in the step.
This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we look alcoholics with a set of clear direction, the purpose, primary, another alcoholic, 10. Paul's going to go first. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 84 for anybody following along. And step 10 is continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. All right, on page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take a personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Paul.
Thanks for reading. Hey, everybody. My name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic. Hey guys, don't worry. Just because it's in double digits, this is not advanced AA. This is like some simple stuff. You're going to get there if you're new. It's cool to see so many people I've never seen before. Like, that's really exciting, man. Welcome if you're new. So step 10, it requires some humility, which I absolutely 100% lack. I just wasn't born with those bones in my body, man. And it's funny because I was desperate a lot in my life, but I was never humbled to the point where I was willing to admit that I was wrong, full stop. Like, I just was never wrong because it was always either somebody else's fault or, I just could never see my part in things. And so the steps before step 10 really helped kind of clear up the fact that, hey, you know, you're not a victim of life. You had a part in all of these resentments that you were dealing with. And that part, you need to go clean that up so that you can kind of start fresh, right? And so the first 9 steps for me were really like, like in Goodwill Hunting, where there's like the huge equation on the board. That's what my life looked like. It was very confusing, very complicated, just like impossible to solve. I just couldn't figure that shit out. I just said, what are we doing here? And the first 9 steps kind of helped me erase that and simplify my life. It erased kind of like this garbage of the past. It erased kind of that blackboard of craziness that was my life before I did the steps. And so now my sponsor at that time, my sponsor is like, all right, man, board's clean. Keep it that way. I was like, thank you for the visual. He knew that I went to art school. Like, I desperately needed a visual to make sense of this because like step 10, if I just kind of went like, I tried to do this nightly inventory Let me not go there. We're going to talk about that. But I, the step is impossible for me to take on my own. And I have a group of guys in my life that I really rely on. And, you know, there's maybe like 20 guys in my phone that I call on a regular basis and I touch base with them. Because, you know, I've been sober for a while, but man, I can still get crazier than hell. I mean, like, it talks about selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. If anybody in my life that doesn't know that I'm an alcoholic knew how hard it was for me to show up and not be full of self, full of fear, and basically a lunatic of resentment, like every day working to not be that guy, they'd be astonished. But these things will crop up. It doesn't say if, it says when, right? And so what I'm trying to do on this daily basis is just, okay, here's where I'm at. This is what's going on in my life. Let me be honest with somebody and tell them. So I'll call a few guys every day. And I'll say, hey, man, I got a lot of fear about this thing going on with my wife, or I got this thing at work that I'm really screwing off with. I'm not working at all. And like, this is literally from this week. I said, hey, I got no work going on. I'm working from home and I'm literally doing nothing. I'm basically stealing company money. And I feel like a big schmo about it. And every single one of those guys was like, okay, what are you going to do? I need that accountability. Like, I need to be able to voice these things with other people, because when I take my own inventory, I can't see the truth, because, you know, Paul's a nice guy and he means well, and he's a nice guy and he helps other people. You know, he's a giver. That's the line that I feed myself, and I need to hear the truth. And so I need to run that through people. I need to run that through an inventory. I choose to do that with people over the phone, because I like to talk, if you couldn't tell. I'm not much on the writing part. But the freedom of getting ahead of these things before I destroy my daily life is really exciting for me now. And also, when I do mess up, it's real quick, man. My pain tolerance has become like zero. I cannot, if I upset anybody or hurt somebody, I used to avoid those conversations for months and let those resentments fester and just like, I'll just pump that down the road for like a year. But now I'm just like, hey, I feel like I hurt you. What happened? What can I do? How can I make this right? Believe it or not, my wife likes that, and she likes me a lot better because of it. And I actually have great relationships with people in my family and in my life because of it. So I'm starting to drone on. I'm going to kick it over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, man.
My name's Scott. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
It's Scott.
I've been continuously sober since August 7th of 2011. And the reason I say that is because my sponsor told me to say that at the beginning of every share, so that it gives the newcomer hope and it lets other people kind of know where I'm at. The first time that I did an inventory was very difficult and very excruciating. And the reason was I had never taken a look at myself and my part in anything. And I had built this system of defenses around taking a look at my part, because I thought if I let someone know what's really going on with me, they're going to hurt me. And so that was, you know, all that stuff is things that are inside of me, inside of my head, inside of my body. And that from my past experiences, once I got past that with someone that I could trust, further inventories about other things became a little bit easier and a little bit easier. And after that, and after I worked through that with somebody, my sponsor, when I got sober, I felt like I could rejoin the human race. You know, that was basically what it felt like. I felt like I could be a part of, I felt like I could be a part of a team. Like I'd never been before. Just always felt like every time I got put on something, I felt separate. And the inventory and talking with it about somebody else or with someone else about it helped me feel like I wasn't alone anymore. And I could really participate as one of, and not, you know, one separate from. And basically what that did for me was just like Paul was saying, it started me off with a clean whiteboard, but really it just felt like the load was off. I was carrying this load of every, you know, every problem in the world was on my back, you know, to the nth degree of like, you know, companies' futures that I had nothing to do with, that I read on a screen, were, you know, their negative things that were going on were on my back. Politics were on my back. And it was like, I'm not a politician. You know, I was a college student when I got sober. I was in the military getting kicked out when I got sober. And, you know, nothing rode on my success other than, you know, my family shame and that kind of stuff. And, so So we get to this inventory, and what it really did was, you know, that it freed me to the point that before I did my first fifth step, which the 10th step is just a fourth and fifth, just to stay current, just so I don't have to live with all that burden anymore. Mm. Once I start to feel burdened, I know that I'm like stuffing stuff back in, and I'm not able to share it with somebody. And the nice thing about a sponsor is it's someone that I can trust. It's just someone, you know, for me, it's somebody in the program that I can trust, that I know I'm about to tell, you know, whatever is going on with me, and they're not going to tell a soul. And I know that for a fact. And that's something I never had before AA. Not necessarily that, you know, the two things that are unique about alcoholics for me is, you know, when I go to church and talk to people about pissing my pants in public, they're like speechless. And, you know, when I come into an AA meeting and I talk to people about that, everyone laughs. They're like, yeah, me too. And or like walking outside and talking to somebody with no clothes on and then realizing you're not wearing any clothes and you're like, oh man, you know. And I talked to the guy, you know, I was assigned to a guy in church to talk to, and he was just like, one time I drank and it was like, I feel bad for you, dude. I think you have a problem. And no, it was just I just couldn't. I had told some people, and I'm sure that they didn't tell anybody else, but they looked at me like I was from another planet. And whenever I started telling them, you know, some stuff, kind of testing them with some information of like, here's some truths about my life, and they were like, whoa. I tell people in AA and they're like, yeah, dude, me too. Mm-hmm. You know, like 10 times what you did actually. And I was like, oh, okay. Thank you. You know, so that put me into a place where I really started to value the inventory because I really liked feeling a part of something. You know, I was always separate. The load was always on my shoulders, and I got to just be one of, and the burden was shared. And that was when what it talks about as our next goal of, you know, essentially being able to grow in understanding and usefulness. Like it starts from that, which is why the 10th step is so important, that we keep it current. You know, you keep your fifth step current by doing your 10th step. It's same, but thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you both. The next reading is, drumroll, also on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we can fit spiritual.
Yeah, man, that's great. I think about this this idea of honesty as well. So I was talking about the humility that you get from doing the steps, but the first few steps also taught me how to be honest. Because I just have this capacity to lie to myself and believe the lies. Even though I know I'm lying, I still believe it. It's really weird, man. Like there's just this weird mental twist that's always happened with me. I also had just been a liar my entire life. I lived in Australia, apparently. I used to tell people that so I would be cool. Back when I was a kid, I'm serious, guys. Like I'm a damn liar. I had a Sega CD, but it was at my dad's house. My parents were divorced. You'll never get to play it. And they were like, but what? But maybe your dad will let you borrow it. I was like, oh, I got to get straight A's to borrow it. I can't bring it to my mom's house until I get straight A's. We know that's not going to happen. And so like, I was just always kicking these lies down the road. And that is like one out of a trillion lies that I have told and kept going for my whole life. And I love what Scott was saying, that idea of this burden. Eventually, I just get so dragged down. It's like that the Christmas Carol, that guy in the beginning, Marley, that's carrying all those chains. Like that's how I was like trudging through life, just carrying all these lies and all this deceit and all this just shitty behavior. It was just ugly, man. And so that got me thinking about that idea of this burden. And so what does that look like? How do I keep in fit spiritual condition? I'm honest. For me, that was the beginning of it. Cause I'm gonna be honest. Like I, I'll be honest, because I'm talking about honesty. The God part of this program, the spirituality part of this program, I didn't give it. I just wanted to not drink and burn my life to the ground. And so, what this was very practical for me, this step, because I could call guys and be like, hey, man, I don't want to drink, but I'm really unhappy. Or I don't think I want to drink, but that breeze in the fall just hit me just right. And I was sitting on a porch. And I just remember having cigarettes and beers with my buddy on his porch this time. Like, it just, like, sometimes that stuff floods back, and I was able to pick up the phone and talk to people. That's what it looked like for me. Now that I've been in the program and I've tried to work on that spiritual part of my life, and I've grown that, you know, I just don't care. I'm not cocky. I just don't care about alcohol. That's not what the real problem was for me anyways. Right. And it talks about that throughout the book, but it's like, if I've got I don't have a drinking problem, because if I stop drinking, problem solved. But when I stop drinking, my life gets worse. Everything's shittier. I hate myself. I hate you more. I hate everything that's going on in my life. And I didn't know what was going on. I was so confused until it was shown to me that, like, hey, man, you have an allergy to alcohol. And once you start, you can't stop. And your brain always tricks you into drinking again. But you drink because you hate the way you feel sober. Oh, that makes sense. So now when I come to this step, it's like, hey, if you hate the way that you feel sober, working these steps throughout your day, calling people, being honest where you are, not being a little unique unicorn running around the world, and just realizing that you're just just another drunk, just another guy. I'm just a guy today. Do you know how great that is? I don't have to be the man. I can just be a guy. And because I'm living in that solution, I just don't care about alcohol. It's just not a thing to me. But I do know this: if I stop doing this program and I stop doing these things on every single day basis, I'm either working away from a drink or towards one. And even though I've got some years under my belt, if I stop doing this thing, I'll start working my way to where I'm working the family out of my life. I work my marriage out of my life. My kids don't want anything to do with me. I probably lose my job because I'm an idiot. Like, I just do all these things and I end up alone. And then all of a sudden a drink might look like a real good idea, right? So I got a really simple decision every single day I wake up. I can hit my knees and pray for the strength to do this stuff, or I can just roll out of bed, hit the ground running, and run my life into the ground. I think I'm just going to do AA today, because that's easier and softer for me. That's what I got for
this. Thanks, Paul. I'm just coming up. So this second paragraph here assumes you're working the 10th step actively.
It's fair. I mean, that's fair.
Because this is the thing. So I'm a guy who... I went to my first meeting at 14. My mom took me there, and I got sober when I was 22. And I went to at least a meeting a year from 14 to 22. Every time I got in trouble, I was in a meeting, because my parents were like, I don't know what to do with you. So here you go. Go find these people. Hopefully they'll fix you. And by the time I was 22, I was ready to listen. I had been in trouble that long. And so I saw this fit spiritual condition. I thought I latched onto that as, like, but you know, before I got sober, I was like, I can go drink as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. It's like, no, that's not how this works. And it's like, okay, I don't need you as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. And there was like, well, not quite either. And it's like, I don't need this program as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. And so my sponsor said, find in the book where it defines that you know you're in fit spiritual condition. And I couldn't find it. And he was like, and so now I'll give you an example. In order to find out whether I'm in fit spiritual condition, I called Paul this morning on my way into work, because I was mad about going into work on a day that there was no work to do. And I'm like, I'm gonna be at work for 8 effing hours today, and there's gonna be no work to do, and there's no cell phone service, and there's no internet, and there's a computer that is like trash, and I'm just not gonna be able to get anything done. And I didn't get anything done today at work. And Paul was like, yeah, man, he's like, you know, it's good that you're doing the right thing and you're like showing up on time, and that's what you have to do in order to earn your paycheck and to get your thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot, like, they'll stop paying me if I stop going to work. You know, like, I'm not just owed the paycheck, I'm not just owed the retirement amount, you know. It was like all that stuff that I forget about, because I'm like, you know, all I'm thinking about is me and my time, and you're wasting my time. And yeah, I forget that like pays for my house and like pays for my food, and like I can eat at any fast food restaurant I want, you know, like even Chick-fil-A, you know. And yeah, right. And I don't have to eat off the dollar menu anymore. And I don't have to go, you know, days without eating. Cause when I got sober, I didn't eat. You know, there were days where I wouldn't eat until I got to the meeting and people would bring me food. And that was just what it was like whenever I got sober. And I forget that, you know, I get like too big in my britches and too spiritually fit in my own brain. And I don't, you know, I don't need anybody else. I don't need, you know, my employer. I don't need any of my friends. I don't need this program. And, you know, it's like in my brain, I'm like, I know exactly, you know, it's like, as soon as a new guy comes in, they're like, I know exactly what I need to do. And you're like, fuck, dude, you're screwed. And, you know, and that's where I'm at. You know, as soon as I'm like, I know exactly what I need to do, it's like, I should start thinking that. But I call somebody else and they're like, whoa, you're scaring us, man. And just take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Don't quit your job. You know, you've got a record. So, like, you might not get hired again. And so it says, we will react sanely and normally. So all these things assume that the person is doing an inventory and they're not running from all their problems. They're not constantly dodging everybody. They're not lying all the time. It assumes that you're able to make things right. And then as you make things right and you don't have that burden on your back and you don't have to lie to everybody, then all this other stuff happens. Like in turn, all this other stuff happens. And I still don't know how to find out if I'm spiritually fit other than calling somebody. I call somebody. I'm like, this is what's going through my head. Everybody's fighting me and I know I'm right. And, you know, and someone gets to bring it up. It's like, hey, do you ever think that, like, you know, I went in and complained that we all had to be at work on another day that we had no work to do. And I have 8 coworkers that are also at work. And they're like, you're preaching to the choir, dude. None of us want to be here either. But like, this is the job, dude. Like, you should get a different job if you don't want to, you know, be here and work this job. And it's like, okay. And, you know, all of us are here. You're the only one complaining about it. And I was like, you know, I literally thought, you guys don't understand because you're not thinking far enough ahead. You know, it's like, oh my God. And sometimes I just need to shut my mouth. And my boss has like been like, wow, they like, you know, I'm here and I'm aware. And
I'm in front of you.
Yeah. And this is something also that was important when I got sober. It says, we have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. And when I got sober, I said, I don't ever want to drink again. I'm never going to drink again. My sponsor said, you get that fucked up idea out of your head right now. And I was like, what? Why? And he said, how many times have you said that to yourself? You know it's not true. And I was like, oh. And he's like, how many times have you said that to your parents? How many times have you said that, you know, to your loved ones? You know that's not true. He's like, we're just going to focus on putting your head on the pillow tonight sober. He said, you start getting in that mindset. You know, he's like, you haven't done any work. You haven't done any step work. He's like, you have no idea if you're going to stay sober for the rest of your life. In fact, you know, for a fact, you're not going. So how about we just do this? How about you just put your head on the pillow sober tonight and you can call yourself a winner? And it was like, okay. Cause you know, if you you hit the gas in a car and the car goes, you know, almost every single time, as long as it's functioning correctly, you know, the car will go. And it's like, if you say, hey, I'm going to hit the gas and the car's not going to go, you know that the car's going to go. And so he's like, why would you tell yourself this? You've said it so many times, you know, it's not true. Let's just focus on something else that, you know, you can do. And that was what we started with. It was like, I just wanted to put the cart in front of the horse. I wasn't even 30 days sober. And there was a guy, Steve, who was sober 42 years. And I was having to go to a meeting every day and, you know, 7 days a week. And I'm looking at this guy who's sober 42 years. And I'm like, John, what am I going to do when I'm sober 42 years? Am I still going to be going to a meeting every day? Like, I'm going to need a social life at some point. And he was like, dude, you're not even sober 30 days yet. Like, why don't you just put one foot in front of the other? And he's like, he told me you were going to sleep, hoping you didn't wake up the next morning. Like, I don't know if you're going to be sober 42 years, you know, what I mean? You might not live that long. And it was like, okay. Yeah. All right. You know, it was like, I just had to always be like brought back and I could just get out there really, really fast. I'm not a guy who can do this alone. I'm not a guy who was like, you could just give me the book and like put me in a hole and I could like figure it out. Cause I tried that, you know, and I ended up bloated every time. I really need the help of the people around me. Mm-hmm. And they really helped me find the things that I'm supposed to be looking for. And after I finished talking to somebody, it's like, oh yeah, that was it. Yep. You found it. That was it. It was the thing I couldn't see, but somebody else was like, oh yeah, I just dealt with this problem last week. It's this, you know, and you're like, oh whoa, you know, like, how did you learn that? It's so spiritual. And yeah, it's great. So that's what I got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Also lived in Australia.
Did you really?
No, not for real, but I did tell you. Did you
really? Oh, that's awesome. Man, I just wanted to be so cool.
Yeah. You and me, man, we could have been neighbors. Yeah. We could have been neighbors.
Sega CDs off the table.
Okay? Yeah.
The next reading is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activity. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
Yikes, dude, you guys could have a meeting just on that paragraph. That's so solid. All right. Well, I got lots of experience of resting on my laurels. You know what, dude, I'll be honest. When I got my last drunk, I ended up passed out in the middle of the road. And I was not like parallel with the cars. I was perpendicular to the cars. And a truck driver kicked me awake because I was almost run over by a truck. That's what I'm bringing to you guys. Like, that's how I drink. I just pass out weird places, pee weird places, and almost die multiple times. So, like, that's what I'm bringing to the table. So when I came in, I was in a lot of pain and I got busy. Just kidding. I didn't at all. I sat in AA and did nothing. And my life got exploded. It was on fire. It was like the Chicago fire of whatever that happened. It was awful. It was just awful every day on fire. And finally, my wife called me out. She had gone to Al-Anon, and that really screwed up my alcoholism. And she called me out and was like, aren't you supposed to be doing steps? And this is as I was bleeding profusely from the head because we had this huge fight and she threw something at me. And I was just done. Like, I was done drinking, and then I was just done running the show. I was like, I am so screwed, dude. I don't know what. So I started doing the steps, and I would love to tell you that I was just a rocket ship of success. But that's not what happened. The staying sober has been not hard, but damn, it's been challenging, dude. Like, it has been really difficult at times, because my will, my selfishness, I'm so full of fear, selfishness, self-seeking, just all these forms of self that start to take me away from the things that I know are good for me. I don't know what that is about my personality. I'm sure you guys might have some experience with that, but like this idea of like, hey man, I'm building it up, it's all good, and just tear it down. And you know, I've almost been divorced. So I divorced my wife to drink like I wanted to, realized what a horrible loser I was on my own, conned her back into marrying me again, and then that's when I almost died in the middle of the street. So we have a long history. We've been together 23 years almost, and I've almost been divorced like 7 times in sobriety. I've almost lost my job multiple times in sobriety. I've alienated people in my life. I've done so many stupid things because I'm a good enough kind of guy. I'll do enough to get enough, and then I'll slide, and then I'll get weird and kind of uncomfortable. The heel get on. I'll come back to AA. All right, guys, I'm ready to make those phone calls again. Let's do it. Beep, boop. I will do enough to get good enough, and then I don't care. And I got sick of that. I think that was kind of the third. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm so sick of fighting. How are we on time?
You're good.
Oh, sick. Plenty. I just, that was another big, I give up moment when I stopped screwing around with the process and just got on with it. Like I confused myself. Bear with me one sec. Yeah, this idea of resting on my laurels. I'm just a good enough kind of guy. We're heading for trouble if we do. I wish I had read that. I did. Because it says alcohol is a subtle foe. So relapse is not a part of my story. When I woke up from that drunk, covered in throw up, almost dead for a time, I never wanted to drink again for the rest of my life. The idea of a drink besides dreams has really not occurred to me because I just, something changed, man. Like, my brain was just different. I just didn't want to drink, but the alcoholism is a subtle foe. This dis-ease of alcoholism is a subtle foe. The anger and the fear and the disgust that I feel just at a base level is a subtle foe because, like I said to you guys, I lie to myself and I believe it. And so for me, this alcoholic brain of mine is the subtle foe. It's not necessarily the drink, it's the thoughts before all that. And it was important for me to know that I'm not cured of that, because I had to fully accept that I'm not cured of alcoholism. I love that. I thought it was so stupid when I first heard it, until Bob started like passing out all these little pins. But once a cucumber becomes a pickle, it can't become a cucumber again. You know, it's just that. It's that easy. That little mental image is so good for me. I'm just a pickle, dude, and that's okay. Like, once I really fully realized that, though, I was like, well, I don't have a choice then. So I give up. I'm just going to do this thing, because I started to get these little glimpses of what my life could be. It wasn't all doom and gloom. Like, there have been some really, really beautiful moments in my life leading up to when I just gave up. That period between like kind of doing the steps and actually doing all the steps, that like 8-year period, there were some really like nice hints of what my life could be. I would always screw them up because I get full of selfishness and stuff. But when I gave up and I stopped fighting, I just gave up, dude. I didn't done much in AA. I have just given up and then done what's been written 90 years ago. When I gave up, I started noticing that I understood what they were talking about with God's will. Cause like, I don't know what God's will is. How the hell would I know that? I don't know. I just have no idea how we would know that. So I don't know what God's will is, but I know what his will isn't. Pause for dramatic effect. Well, God's will isn't for me to be a jerk to my wife. It's not for me to be a scumbag to the people I meet in my life. It's God's will is not for me to be all the things that I was before I got sober in AA. Like, I know that, so I can get with that. And so then what I started doing was I started saying, okay, well, if I know 100% that I'm going to screw this up, I should just probably ask for guidance or the ability to accept whatever garbage happens in my life and then move forward. And so I made a real habit of doing that every day. My prayer life is not some like 80-minute communion with God. It is me rolling on my knees in the morning being like, God, got no idea what's coming. Please just help for me not to make it worse. And please help for me to be kind, loving, and patient. That's it. And then I'm able to kind of get on with it. And so when I just kind of give my will over every morning, kind of nice, because I'm not running the thing. I suck at managing my own life. And I am 100% fully aware of that now. I dabbled with it for many years. I'm kind of not good at running my life, but I'll do this. Burn that to the ground. Well, I can manage this sales team. Oh my God, I'm about to get fired. I'm so scared. Like, I'm so bad at managing my life, but I convince myself that I'm not, until it's so bad that I just give up again. And that's what I got for that, man. I'm so friggin' thankful to know that I'm just screwed, just completely and fully, because then I can just get on with the healing and the building relationships. And so fast forward, I start working this program fully. I start getting more into the spiritual aspects of this program. I start helping other guys. I do all the steps of alcohol, not just like 9 to 10 of them consistently. I do all of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my wife and I have been married again for 12 years. It's freaking beautiful, dude. We are literally the best of friends. It's amazing. The relationship is phenomenal. It's great. Not bragging. I'm just saying it's taken a lot of damn work, but we got there. I have 2 kids that we never thought we could have. They're the loves of my life. They're just beautiful. My job, I went through a lot of pain and growth and pain and growth and pain and a little growth and then some more pain. I bludgeoned myself into compliance. And because of that, I have a great job and I'm able to work from home and support my family. My wife's back in school so I can take care of everything. Like, it's just really cool, man. It is all worked out, but only because I stopped trying to manage them. And I just asked, how can I show up and be of service? Not just in AA, because that's easy. Like, I'll do AA stuff all day, because you guys see that and you're like, oh God, Paul's just such a nice guy. Look at him go. He's just doing Mr. AA. Like, I could do that. The real stuff happens. Like, what am I doing at home? Am I a good neighbor? Do I talk a bunch of shit on my neighbors, or am I just like quietly taking up their trash cans for them if they're out of town? You know, like, whatever. I'm not trying to be a saint. All I'm saying is I can just quietly be of service to people. And that is so amazing. I have a full life. When I was out drinking and running my life full of self, that shit was hollow, super empty, didn't get any joy out of anything, sucked. I do simple things like put the dishes away without hassling somebody in my house. And I feel full. If you haven't experienced that, that's a pretty great thing. Like, just simply doing a chore and not feeling owed. Super good. I hope you get to feel. Yeah.
The thing that stuck out to me here was, we can exercise our willpower along in all we wish. It is the proper. So what I always struggled with was I'm working so hard, but things aren't working out for me.
Mm.
And so what I learned here was before I started to do the steps with my sponsor, I thought I need to get to this point. I thought there was like this line in the sand and I like had to get past this point and then I'd be fixed and then I could use my willpower again. And it was just how it appeared to me. And whenever I got sober, I just wanted to snap my fingers and knock out whatever I needed to knock out so that I could like then take my will back.
Mm.
And a couple things happened when I got sober that really you messed me up for the better. A lady said, I'm a liar, alcoholics are liars, cheats, thieves, and perverts. And I thought, you know, I'm not a liar, cheat, and a thief anymore because I'm sober now. And, so, and, I was like a month sober and I realized I was stealing stuff.
Mm.
And I was 2 months sober and, I realized I couldn't tell my sponsor the truth about a story. I had to change something to embellish it. I physically could not tell him. I felt like Jim Carrey in Liar, Liar. And I cried because I was like, I cannot get the truth out to this man.
Mm.
And he's saving my life. And I can't tell him the truth about this thing. And it's an inconsequential piece of information.
Mm.
And, but I can't tell him. And I'm like trying to be honest because in how it works, it talks about, if you want success in this program, you need to be honest. And I'm literally trying to tell him the truth about it was like the color or the speed of something. And I could not tell him the truth about it. And I was like, what is wrong? And then, I got sober in college. And, I didn't know that if you got the exams early in college, that was cheating. If you worked it to where you could get the exams beforehand, I thought everyone did that. And the harder you worked at getting those, the better you could expect to do on the exam. Yeah. And here I am just nonchalantly talking to my sponsor and he's like, that's cheating. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's how you get through college. Like, how do you think I'm in my fifth year of college? I'm like, I know the other students are doing it. You just got to find people that are cool, you know, that aren't going to throw you under the bus for their own benefit because they've got the test. You just got to not get caught. And he's like, that's not how college works. And I'm like, I am not sure what college was like 50 years ago, but this is what college is like. And I looked around, I started asking people like, how did you guys get through school? And they're like, well, I do homework on, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Office hours are from like 10 to 11. So I go to office hours to get help. And I'm like, holy shit, people are spending like 6 hours a day studying. And it just blew my mind. And it was like, what does that mean about me? And so it came back to, you know, I've just got all this stuff going on that I'm like learning about myself and then I'm starting to do this because these people were complaining about these problems that I thought they had, but I didn't have. And I went to this, my home group meeting, especially they would essentially, you know, fifth step or 10th step in the meeting and talk about what was going on with them and how they felt about it. And I thought, man, these people have all these problems, you know, they're selfish and self-centered. Like I feel so bad for them, you know, as I'm sitting in the meeting, you know, planning out how I'm going to do all this, how I'm going to enforce my will on the world once I leave here. And just no ability to connect the two things. And I remember being in class one day, I got sober in college. I remember being in class one day, looking at these guys and they were talking to each other and then one of them like met eyes with me while they were talking and like looked back down and continued talking. I was like, they're fucking talking about. And so I stood up and I was like, what did you guys say about me? And they were like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you guys were talking about me. And they were like, no, we weren't talking about you. Well, what were you talking about then? I was like, well, we were talking about the football game this weekend where the one dude hit the Eastern Illinois guy. And it was like, yeah. And his helmet came off and we thought it was funny. And I was like, so you weren't talking about me at all? And they were like, no. Like, we don't even know you. And I was like, well, I just found out I'm selfish and self-centered. And I just think everybody's talking about me. And they're like, just speechless. Okay. Just looking up at me like, is this guy going to go away? I'm like, I can talk, you know, and I like walk back over and sit down at my desk. And I'm like, dude, you know, here I am. I'm like, you know, it's incepting me that I'm sitting in these meetings, these problems that I don't have. And I'm like, I'm messed up. Like, I am just all sorts of backwards and like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And so that's like the funny side of it. And then, so I'm going to this meeting and there's this guy in the meeting and he rode a motorcycle. He wore a leather jacket and he was a man's man. And his name was either Mark or Carl. I can't remember now, but he was like, I had a sponsor and everybody said, you do what your sponsor tells you to do. And this guy said something that was really useful to me, but got under my skin a little bit. And it was, God works in obedience. And I was like, it was like, how do I fix all this stuff? And he says, God works in obedience. I'm like, I have no idea what that means, but for some reason it makes sense. I'm just going to do what I'm told and we'll see what happens. And it really did help me to just not focus on the outcome, not focus on the results and just do the work. And so here I was, and I'm sitting here, I'm sitting next to my sponsor in the meeting. And this guy's like, I'm not going to let another man tell me what to do. And my sponsor's like, tell me to do the steps and the inventory and be at certain meetings at certain times and telling me like, I don't know if you're going to stay sober. You need to be here 30 minutes early. You need to be talking to people. Like, you might need more help than most people. It's like all this stuff. And I'm in this meeting and this guy's like, I'm not going to let someone else tell me what to do. I'm my own man. I can do my own thing. And I'm like, in my brain, I'm like, yes, that's me. I need to hang out with this guy. And my sponsor's like, sit down. The meeting's about to start. I'm like, okay, yeah. And I sit down, and right next to him, like I'm so like a good boy. And I'm watching this guy intently, and it's like, yeah, like this guy's got it. He's got his chest puffed out. He's got the hair. He's got the leather jacket. He's big. I'm like, yeah, this is gonna be good. And I wasn't sure how I was gonna get to that point, but I was planning it out. And it was like, one or two Wednesdays later, his picture was on the table in the meeting, and they were talking about the fact that he had, I was like, what's going on? Like, I know this guy, from the club meeting, like, what's going on? Why is his picture on the table in a church? And they were like, well, he's dead. He got drunk. He went to a bar. He got drunk. He blacked out. He drove his car into a tree. His leg stayed in the car. And his body went through the windshield. And I was like, fuck, like, that's, and they were trying to, that's not the bad part. The bad part is, they were like, the bad part is we're trying to find a place for his daughter, cause she's going to go into foster care. Mm-hmm. The mom was in prison for possession with an intent to deal. And, the parents were involved in some drug, or the grandparents were involved in some drug stuff. And so they weren't going to put the kids with any family members. So she was going to go into foster care. And I'm like, a three and a half year old little girl is going into foster care because this guy couldn't stay sober because he wasn't going to let another man tell him what to do. And I was going to go with him, that's all I could think. And I was like, I went to my sponsor. I was like, whatever you want me to do, deal. I don't want to go out like that. Cause I thought, I really thought I was going to be on a jet ski and I was going to go off the dam, like a 007 jumps off the dam and he's got his like base jumping, thing, and there's like fire, fireworks and all this stuff, and I thought it was gonna be cool, and I thought people were gonna be like, that guy's fucking awesome, and this was like reality, and it was like, oh my god, dude, that's me. And had I not wanted to be that guy, I wouldn't have had that experience. But I was like, whatever. And so I was like, whatever I want to do is obviously wrong. Like, I just, with all that stuff leading up to that, whatever I want to do is obviously wrong. I'm just gonna do what you guys tell me to do. I can't end up like that. I just can't end up like that. And I was like, my sponsor was like, okay, well, your job is to pick up new guys. And so I got sober with a car. I didn't have any gas money. So I would beg my grandparents for gas money and they would give me money. And my grandma called it mission work. And I would go pick up alcoholics before meetings. And that was the only thing I was allowed to do. I had a big mouth. I really thought I knew the message and I really didn't. And my sponsor said, you need to go pick these guys up. Try not to talk about him, try not to talk to him too much, but get him to some people who know how to stay sober. Okay. Like just get him there, where Jerry lives, where I, you've got all of our phone numbers. You just get him to the meeting, you get him to the people, and you call to make sure you got backup whenever you get him there. Cause I don't want you running your mouth too much. You just tell him how long you're sober and you're like, that you have a sponsor and like, and what meetings you go to, and like, you just kind of stick to that. And he's like, don't do your whole like pontificating thing where, they just don't need that. They got a lot going on. Like, they just get into the meeting. And it was like, okay. And that's what I did. And I, And I was like, whatever, you know, like it was right after that experience. I was like, whatever, dude, like I'm going to, you know, I'm going to pick up so many fucking new guys. Like, and I would leave like 4 hours early for a meeting to get everybody in every town. And I was like, if there's a new guy that can't get to a meeting because they don't have a ride, you know, it's on me. That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so I got around, I'd pick people up. And, you know, sometimes it was scary and I was like, dude, you know, my car is not going to survive this situation, or, you know, I might not survive this situation. And, and so we, you know, we'd get to the meeting and I remember I was like 7 months sober. And, you know, when I got sober, I was $110,000 in debt to the federal government. I was getting kicked out of school. I got kicked out of school and I just kept showing up because my sponsor told me to keep showing up. He's like, if you write the school a check and you keep showing up, they don't care. Like, just there, you know, you'll be fine. And I had a piece of paper that was like, do not come back here. You punched a student in a Taco Bell, you know, like, and it was like, you know, allegedly you got camera footage, but, and you know, and I was going to jail for felony battery. It was pending some stuff. And, I was getting kicked out of the military. I called my parents for help and they said, don't call and don't come home anymore. I just hurt him too much. And they were just like, this is too much for us. We can't bail you out. This is the rest of what we have. You know, we can't do anything. We've done everything we can do. And they were like, just don't call and don't come home anymore. Like, good luck. And so, when I was a day sober and when I was 7 months sober, my life circumstances were identical. Except when I was 7 months sober, I was the happiest I'd ever been in my life. And all I was doing was driving new guys to meetings. And that was it. And that was when this is the proper use of the will started to click. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't care about the debt. I don't care about the school stuff. I don't care about anything else. Like, I'm living day to day. I'm making no money and I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. I truly have a purpose that is completely unique in the fact that I'm a crazy person. I'm an alcoholic and I'm 7 months sober and I've never been able to stay sober ever in my life, ever been able to stay sober. And I can't even explain it. And I sit next to a guy who is going home that night, hoping that he doesn't wake up the next morning. And I'm thinking, me too, dude. I'm right there with you. Like fucking 7 months ago, I'm right there with you. This is what I was thinking about. And all people did was spend time with me in AA. They spent time with me until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning every night after meetings. And so that's what I did. You know, I spent time with new guys and I tried to do what people were doing for me. And I did it really, really hard. One, the whole liar, cheat, thief, and you know the other thing. I tried really hard. One, because that dude died, and I was like, "That's me. That's gonna be me. That is me. Those are the kind of people I'm gonna hurt." And two, because I had nothing to lose. You know, like everybody was gone in my life that meant anything to me, and it was all because of drinking and alcoholism. I had nothing to lose at this point. My plan A was to go to Mexico and my plan B was to try to get sober and get some money to then continue on to Mexico. And so here I was getting sober by accident. And that was the point that I realized all that stuff that I was chasing in my life was not the important stuff in life. It was finding new guys and realizing that I get the opportunity to look into someone's eyes. And I got this opportunity when I was six months sober, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I just saw their eyes light up. I just saw them look into somebody else's eyes, share some messed up stuff about themselves with me share some messed up stuff about myself with them, and then be like, like, there's some hope, you know, like I got to see that in someone's eyes. And I thought, people don't get this. Like, psychologists don't get this. Like, people just, you don't get this opportunity anywhere else to be able to look into someone's eyes and see life come back to them, you know, from the living dead to have them, you know, life breathed into them. And all I had to do was share about how terrible my life is, you know, all the stuff that I'm ashamed of, what's really going, all the things that I would never tell anybody outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I share it with somebody who's in the pits of despair, like I was, and they light up. Yeah. And that was when I realized this, we can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish is just the proper use of the will. And that was when I realized that this, that's what that means. And that's what we get to experience here. That's unique from anybody else in the world. And even unique from other alcoholics who aren't working with alcoholics, mm-hmm. who aren't doing the steps, who aren't working with alcoholics. And I've had periods, definitely had periods of resting on my laurels when I got my first paycheck sober, when like the military brought me back in, that my XO was a guy in Al-Anon and saw that I was sober like 10 and a half months, shredded all my paperwork, got me back in the military, gave me my dream job, wiped my debt, literally like flipped my life completely the opposite. Just because he was like, oh, he's sober. And he tried to help like two guys get sober in the unit. And like, all I'm thinking is like, I got to get to new guys or I'm going to die like that other. I got to get new guys to meetings or I'm going to die like that other guy. And that was all I was thinking. And here, you know, and here was changing my whole life around. But I got my paycheck. I started spending. I thought all that was all the important stuff. I'm like, sweet. I got my job. My criminal record's gone. My sponsor was like, this is the scariest time that I've ever experienced in your sobriety. It was like everything that's been keeping you here is mm-hmm. gone. And that kind of hit home too. And I was like, okay. And so I got focused on how much money I was making. And in 2 to 3 months, I had lost a lot of that reliance on what we were doing here. And it was a good lesson for me. I was living paycheck to paycheck, rent free in my grandparents' house. So I literally had zero bills and I was still living paycheck to paycheck. And I was just chasing anything that made me feel different in sobriety. And it was a good lesson. And when I had my first move with work, I went right back to taking new guys to meetings. I was like, yep, this is wrong. I don't need to look at money that way. I obviously need help. And I get to exercise my will along the will line that we're supposed to be. So that's what I got about that.
Thank you. All right. And we are out of time. Thank you both very much for an awesome meeting. Alrighty. State safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA related announcements?
We bring Southeastern Conference of So helping.
Thank you.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic named David.
David.
Grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober tonight. The next two events that I'm going to describe, both of them are taking place right here in this room.
Wow.
The first one is the Gratitude Breakfast, which is going to be on November 5th. That's Saturday. You can remember it because it's a 5th.
Hi-oh. Got it.
2, 3, 4. But we're basically, this room is going to be full of tables. We're going to cook a massive breakfast back in that kitchen for everybody. 9 a.m. on November 5th. All are welcome. We'll have 4 speakers, starts at 9 a.m. And then if you look on the literature table over there, you'll see some very attractive pumpkin colored flyers. I would invite everybody to take them back to your groups. It would help us out a lot. But that flyer describes an event. It's going to be like the Monday night before Thanksgiving, whatever that day works out to be. November 21st, we're going to have Laura and M come down from Richmond. And we're what we call it is supper and a speaker. Once we conclude all these steps that we're doing here, then we have a little party. So 6 o'clock potluck. Potluck means bring a dish. Seriously, bring a dish. 6 o'clock potluck. And we'll lay it out in here. And then Lauren will come up and tell her story at the regular meeting time, which is 7 p.m. All are welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, David. Any other?
Hi, I'm Den. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Den. Den.
On Tuesday, November the 8th, Home Group will be coinciding with Celebration as well. At 7.
Nice.
45th. That's good.
No more. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Awesome. Point out that literature is available right there on the hand sanitizing station, aka, AKA the literature table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you need any literature. If you can fold it, it's Sponsorship questions, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. I don't know why I'm noticing lots of typos today. All right. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cam provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Not sure if I've said that web URL enough. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Straight shot down Colonial Avenue if you go over the train tracks too far. It's right there on the right before you hit it. In closing, let's thank our panel again. Please, after we say the
David, our book is
don't want to stand up. There actually is sanitizer on that station for the first time. In
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Keep coming back. It works when you work.